ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
I'm going to try and flag him down. We're running to the car. Run, run. We hear so much about workplaces, but it's actually really, you can tell by the vibe of a place. So that's what I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, it's good to go out and see something new.
What are you most curious about for this workplace?
I think what it looks like, just to see the workplace design and to meet the people too.
That's producer Michelle and me on our way to an office with a difference. It's a neuro-inclusive workplace, and you'll get actual examples of the things that they do to not only attract, but also to keep their talented staff. When we're talking about neurodiversity, we're talking about things like autism, ADHD, dyslexia, and other traits that mean the person processes information differently to those who are neurotypical. So what does that mean for the way we work?
We're keen to get this work done, and we're going to get it done really well. Just set me up for success and give me autonomy, and I will come in and do amazing things for you.
Hello, I'm Lisa Leong, and for this working life, we're learning how to manage neurodiversity at work. Vicky Little is the CEO of a social impact enterprise that helps people with neurodiversity find ongoing employment that makes the most of their talents. She's been working in this field for almost two decades and has seen a lot of changes in that time.
Neurodivergent people have always been here. This is not new. It's just our level of understanding has improved. However, I believe we still have a long way to go. We still see organisations conducting their recruitment in a way that is what we call traditional and a bit archaic, to be honest, because it's only assessing someone's capacity to speak really well in a short, stressful environment where they're really being assessed on their nonverbal communication and their likability and their interpersonal skills, and not on their capacity to do the actual job. So if you're continuing to recruit in that way, you're only going to get a certain type of person. And so we're really about enabling organisations to think about recruitment in a totally different way, to enable people to show what they can do, to enable neurodivergent people to really have the chance to demonstrate their skills. And so we've still got a long way to go because organisations still need to recognise that there's talent who isn't coming into their organisation because of those barriers. And also, secondly, and most importantly, your workplace practices need to be more neuro-inclusive to retain your amazing staff.
We go up. Let's visit a neurodiverse-friendly workplace now and see how they're managing it. First floor, the business is called The Digital Picnic. Open sesame.
Welcome. Welcome to the TDP.
Okay. Hi, Michelle. And here is Cherie. You don't mind if I stick this microphone under your chin?
Don't worry. I'm used to it from Dane and everyone else. Little content creation agency, so we're pretty comfortable with whatever you have.
Hi, Dane.
Hello. How are you doing?
We'll hear more from Dane and Cherie soon. But first, let's get a tour of the office. It's a big open space with a lounge at the front and two desk areas broken up by a big red lounge. There are some bean bags and a strange-looking ergonomic chair that's good for those who find it hard to sit still. I asked newest staff member Victoria to show me around a bit more.
We know for some people, lighting can be a really hard topic in office environments, particularly when it's that harsh, white, bright lighting. So one, we've got dimmable office lights in the office to begin with, but at each desk we've also got little strip lights that people can use, so we can turn off the big lights and use the little lights instead.
When do you agree to turn off the big lights?
I think pretty much first thing in the morning. We're all pretty similar when it comes to our lighting preferences and prefer to have it a little bit dimmer. I think the other thing that is really great and inclusive about this office space is that we recognise that not everyone deals with noise in the office in the same way. So there's a few things to help combat that, I guess. One being noise cancelling headphones, which is a really big one that all new starters get when they start with the team. But also having quiet spaces both in our office and in the wider building that they can then retreat to if they just need a little quiet time away from the team. This one here is our main meeting boardroom. So this is where we'll have most of our team meetings, or also, again, another quiet space if people want to come and retreat to. We've got posters around the place that lean into our values, but my favourite bit in this room is our fidget tools. So we've got a really nice big box of fidget tools that clients and team members can use when we're in meetings. again, to recognise that people focus in different ways. So you've got everything from your poppers, your fidget spinners, your one little picky pad things, and there's plenty of variety in there. Again, a really great way to recognise that people have different attention spans and focus in different ways.
What's your favourite one?
I'm partial to the picky pads. I love them. So you essentially pick out these little beads out of the pad. It's weird. It sounds odd, but it's my favourite in the box.
Can you describe the fork? It's a little figurine and it looks like a fork with a funny face, but it's got a purpose, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. So this is Forky. For anyone who's seen the Toy Story movies, it's a character from those movies. But we've essentially brought it in as a bit of a tongue-in-cheek, humorous way for people to take up space in meetings. Sometimes when it's in a really big team meeting, people may feel a little bit intimidated about stepping in or kind of jumping in with their own opinions. And we know that if someone picks Forky up, it means they want to jump in and contribute.
Thanks, Victoria. Cherie Clonan is the CEO and owner of this business, and she's a proud autistic woman. Show us to your corner of the sky.
My corner of the sky?
Here we are in her office, and she's taking me through all the fab things on her wall.
What you're looking at is just my brain kind of in action. So my job is to keep growing this business, and I like to really visually represent to our team where we need to get to for that to happen. So instead of me just handing over a profit and loss kind of spreadsheet, I gamify everything for that kind of dopamine deficiency piece. So if anyone, this is definitely showing my age, but if anyone remembers the TV show The Price is Right from like circa 80s/90s, we're actually looking at Cliffy the cliffhanger in action. So instead, I turned that into Mount Profitable, and we just do our best to get to the associated revenue targets alongside our beautiful head of finance and operations, Michelle.
On her desk, Cherie has a turtle statue. She loves turtles. And a bright red keyboard with multicoloured raised and rounded keys that, of course, I just had to try.
So a lot of people get a lot of satisfaction from typing away at something like this.
Keyboards like that one are one of the items found in a new employee's welcome pack, but more on that later. Cherie says that around 40 to 50% of her workforce identifies neurodiverse and they bring great benefits to her business.
So I find the more sort of C-suite folk that I hang out with and talk to, they've got the polar opposite problems that I have, where they're trying to find folks who are passionate about, you know, the work that they're employing them to do. And I'm like, actually, I have excessive passion and I have to remind folks, close the laptop, pal. It's time to call it a day, you know.
And when you're talking about C-suite, for those who don't know, that's the CEOs and the CFOs, so the people who are in charge.
Yeah, maybe probably think they're in charge. I think my team are in charge of all of us, and that's another thing. You know, those super neuro-inclusive workplaces, we roll with just a real lack of hierarchy, you know, and it's nice. It's really nice.
Cherie recruits all staff to her business using non-traditional methods. That includes giving interviewees the questions beforehand and allowing them to redo answers when they feel like they didn't give it their best the first time. The successful candidate will get additional help to accommodate their specific needs. This means more information gathering.
The biggest thing that we recommend is just investing in that deep assessment of each person. Most HR talent and acquisition teams will do that anyway, but even at a small business level like ours, we just go all in on that deep sort of assessment and really study, you know, through formalised assessments, how folks prefer to take in information, how they offer information, what their feedback style is, you know, and so on. And then before they even hit the floor, I guess, I say that in inverted commas, you know, their manager has the chance to do a really big deep dive on each individual, and then they can meet them, you know, where they're at and where they want to stretch to and so on.
And you create an About Me document for each employee.
Mm-hmm.
What's that?
Yeah, it's no more than 1 to 2 pages, and it will have a series of questions like, I prefer to receive feedback like ... some of my quirks include ... how I feel misunderstood in a workplace is ... So questions like that that become like a little PDF, and then just something really endearing. And this might not be for everyone. I'm a bit of a hard on sleeve romantic heart, but we put 2 little photos at the top. The first photo is them as a kid, and the other photo is them now, you know, and I just like to remind peers, colleagues, everyone started out with dreams that they had and might have ended up in careers that they dreamt about having as kids. And it's really nice to think that you bring that kind of whole self to work. So it just reminds folks on the days where you might be just having that day with that peer where you're like, I am so sick of, I don't know, insert something that's just really irritating here. And then you look at their little baby photo and it doesn't make you angry for very long. You're like, okay, that's a bit cute, you know. But the point is, the About Me is just a really great reference for direct managers, especially to be able to read through and really understand in a deep way, you know, who they're managing, who they're leading, but also peer-to-peer as well. Now, we're a small organisation, so the bigger organisations, I say, roll that out into departmentally, you know, and you will have a solid, deep understanding of who's in your team. And it's the kind of stuff that, you know, really does create that high-performing team/culture. And we really need to understand each other if we want to get the best out of, you know, each other and the team.
Jessie's a marketing specialist and she works primarily from home. She's autistic and describes herself as having inattentive ADHD.
I would definitely find it hard to sort of follow along like the social rules and norms around communication. It can be really challenging to, especially in a workplace, I guess, where there are like rigid rules and standards to kind of conform to what people expect from communication.
Have you got an example?
I would say like people consider me a direct communicator. So it could come across as being like either mean or unapproachable, or if you're asking a lot of questions because you're trying to qualify what they're saying or understand what they're saying, it could come across as you're questioning them. So and it can also come across as being insubordinate at times when you're just trying to clarify what's going on, or you kind of don't get the hierarchy or the implied, you know, like people have like a acceptance of things that maybe are kind of not so black and white, like the grey areas in between, and you're very literal, so you can really like be almost calling people out at times accidentally, and it's kind of like, are you challenging people? You're not, like, you're like, you don't understand those nuances, things like that.
And how do you go with sensory things?
Yeah, I do prefer to be in a low light environment. So I have my setup working from home, which is, you know, I don't have the big lights on, absolutely no big lights in my home. we're the not big light neurodivergent family. I also wear like noise cancelling headphones even at home. If I'm by myself, even it's like the noise of the electricity, every running thing, I can hear everything outside. So as much of the noise that I can kind of reduce is helpful to maintain concentration.
What happened to you in previous workplaces then, Jessie?
Yeah, when I my first role in marketing, and I had no idea about anything neurodivergence-wise. I didn't know that women could have autism. I didn't know I could possibly have autism. And I would be at work and I was a fantastic worker. Like I output so much volume of work, actually like potentially 3 times more than other people. Like I had about 70 of their branches. I had 70 versus 22 that the other coworker had. And I would output everything to a really high standard. But the one problem the owner had with me, like he just couldn't put his finger on. And so I would consistently get the phone call, come down to my office, and he would say like, it's your facial expressions, it's your body language, it's the sound of your voice. Like, and he had literally convinced me that I needed to learn like etiquette and deportment.
Jessie eventually left that job and spent many years afterwards freelancing before finding this current role where she's going from strength to strength. Let's hear from Dane now. He's a content creator with dyslexia. Here's what it was like for Dane when he began working in London.
Yeah, so thinking of one place I used to work at, I was keeping the dyslexia hidden. I wouldn't disclose it during interviews and I would just struggle silently. And I think when I have said, hey, this is tricky for me, help, it's kind of said, well, there's no one else to do it, so do it. So it becomes the task you put off because, you know, it's going to be the hardest one to do.
And what did the job entail that you found hard?
So, because content creation, I think a lot of people think if you're in that industry, you have to wear multiple hats. And if you're making the graphic, then you should be able to write the copy. Yeah, or like writing documents to do with strategy that are going to go across different people and not using documents that are going to benefit my brain. I think working here, it's being allowed to color code things. And initially when you open up a document, especially as a new starter in a team, it's like, oh, where do I even begin? Like, what is all this text and text and text? Like, nothing's even bolded out. And yeah, trying to adjust to fit in with the workplace rather than being like, hey, I've got a different approach to this that, you know, you might not have thought about before, because my brain has allowed me to think outside the box a little bit. And then definitely working here when I've done that and everyone's like, oh yeah, okay, that definitely helps.
People like Dane and Jesse often leave jobs because they find managing or masking their neurodiversity without workplace support just too hard. Having a boss with lived experience can be a game changer. Here's Cherie Clonan again.
We've got much more of a focus on the strengths rather than shaming folks for different challenges. You know, what would be, I don't know, just a clinically described deficit. Here, I think it's just that celebration of all of the different strengths. Like, I'm looking at a content specialist as we're speaking now. He's a powerhouse dyslexic man. And he and I, we worked, when autism and dyslexia collide, it is a beautiful thing. It is an it's my
black. Give me an example.
It's my black and white brain. If you were to see the documents that I present to him, I can't believe what he goes and does with it, you know? And I get jealous. I wish I had his dyslexic strengths to be able to do that, but I don't think like that. I'm a black and white, you know, kind of thinker, and I present a document. I'm like, yeah, we can present this to the client. He's like, over my dead body, you know, are we presenting this, you know, to the client? So he makes everything absolutely incredible. So yeah, celebration of strengths. Outside of that, again, just the different accommodations that folks need. We've got some of our team are working entirely different hours just because it suits their circadian rhythm, you know, better. So one particular team member had some struggles holding down different work, you know, sort of work arrangements prior to coming to us. And I guess on paper, if she were to meet like a talent and acquisition team, it would look like the, and I say this in inverted commas, but the job hopper. And they're really hard, like in terms of getting even the interview, that's a hard one to clock. I just look at that and think, what need hasn't been met in some of these workplaces? And, you know, maybe that means I have this, you know, almost like romantic level of unwavering belief. But the long story short is she's been here for 6 years now. She's received multiple promotions, and all she needed was an 11 a.m. start instead of a 9 a.m.
Wow.
And the happy little side bonus is I've lost count of how many emails I get from our clients who are like, I love your hustle. Your team was still emailing at 9 p.m. I'm like, she started at midday, mate. But sure, you know, whatever you need to hear.
So if everyone's getting their individual needs met, how do they work together so that they're not kind of disrupting each other?
Yeah, that's the trickier one, to be really honest. And I can speak to this pretty well because I'm in a completely neurodivergent home, you know, at home. And really interestingly, my family all sit in completely different sensory quadrants, and so therefore we have completely different sensory profiles and needs. I think 50% of our family sit in the sensory seek quadrant, and then the other 50% sit in the sensory avoidant. So if you're avoiding particular sensory things, those seekers, wow.
In your space.
I'm like, please be quiet, you know, and so on. So in this workplace, we need to make sure that on the 6 days that we're here in the offices, there's that sort of mutual respect for different quadrants that all of our team kind of sit in. We've got quiet places to retreat to. We've got the headphones, obviously. We've got the overhead dimmable lighting so that everyone can have the dim setting. And then if you need to bump it up, we've got lights individually at each desk if someone just needs something brighter or something like that. And so it's actually, believe it or not, it's a lot easier than you think to just design the workplace so that it sort of suits, honestly, I hope as many as possible. I don't know that I'm going to, you know, completely satisfy everyone's individual needs, but we just do our very best, and we commit to the moment we know better, we do better.
What about the person who's sitting there thinking, look, I'm neurotypical and this is a lot of work with someone who just has all of these needs. So it's like me. What about us all having to act as a team? We have to come into the office and we have to do what we need to do. It's work.
So to those folk who are like, oh, this feels like so much work, I promise you it's more work to exclude than it is to include. And I'm the business who's sitting in the thick of an economic downturn that absolutely does impact industries like mine. And we're still going from absolute strength to strength. In fact, I feel like we've never been, you know, this strong. So if nothing else matters, like, this is positively impacting my bottom line in a really big way, you know. It's harder to exclude than include, but it's been really beneficial for me and this business's bottom line to go all in on the neuroinclusivity piece.
Thanks, Sheree. See you again soon. Okay. Bye.
Back to Vicky Little from Specialist Turn Now. I asked her why the many large corporates they work with actively look for neurodiverse staff.
There's so many reasons. People used to think, oh, they're just doing it, you know, as a tick box because it's a nice thing to do. Getting it right, being aware of neurodiversity and actively hiring and supporting your neurodivergent staff isn't just a nice thing to do. It's good for business because the value that neurodivergent employees bring to the workplace is invaluable. You're talking about a cohort of people who think differently in an incredible way, can solve problems in a way that perhaps neurotypical people can't because they can see the bigger picture or they can see the detail and they can look at the problem from a different side and come up with solutions in that way. The capacity to, for example, work in a methodical way for long periods of time, incredibly accurate. There's so many examples of the sorts of skills that neurodivergent people bring to the workplace that if your organization is not actively tapping into neurodivergent talent and trying to retain, like build a neurodiverse workplace and retain your staff, then you're going to be missing out on that talent and your competitors are going to be ahead of you in that space.
And you've got a success story from a placement in a cybersecurity team.
Yes. So we worked with one of the big banks and we placed a number of people across different areas of the organisation and we placed one gentleman into a cybersecurity role. Now, he was a great example of a very academic individual, had been successful at university, had multiple degrees, but had never been able to get into the workplace because of that interview, the limitations it puts on neurodivergent people and their capacity to sell themselves. And so he was never able to get a job. He came through one of our neurodiverse hiring programs with this organization and he was successful in getting the cybersecurity role. Within the first 3 months of being in that role, he had solved a problem that had been sitting in that team for 5 years and it was a problem that had affected all of their vendors. And so it was a significant achievement. And to this day, he doesn't really know exactly what he said because in his mind, he just saw the problem, saw the solution and suggested that solution. But that's just an example of how a neurodivergent brain can work differently to solve those incredible problems. Needless to say, he's still working there. He was quickly promoted, became subject matter expert and obviously got a pay rise. And so, yes, he's a fantastic example of how if you look at recruitment differently and if you put in place the workplace supports to help your neurodivergent staff succeed, then they can bring incredible value to your teams and your organisations.
And Vicky, do some organisations and even particular staff push back on accommodating neurodiversity? Why should some people get special treatment? We all have to work and do things we don't like.
It's funny, you know, if there was an organisation to say that they were going to push back, I'd be saying, well, you're going to be missing out on the talent because it's 1 in 5. Your workforce is already neurodiverse, whether you know it or not. And so if you're not putting in place the adjustments that people might need or the accommodations, or at least taking the time to understand how they work best and how they what they need to succeed, then you're not going to retain that staff. And that's a huge percentage of your workforce.
Vicky Little is the CEO of Specialist Earn Australia. And you heard as well from Sheree Clonan, CEO of The Digital Picnic, and her staff, Dane, Jesse, and Victoria. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Tell me what you think. You can get in touch by sending an email to thisworkinglife@abc.net.au. Next time, overwhelm is a state that lots of people are struggling with right now. But what if, instead of adding tasks to your long to-do list, you started taking things away? We'll teach you how to start subtracting at work. You've been listening to This Working Life with me, Lisa Leong. It was produced by Michelle Weeks, mixed by Matthew Crawford on the lands of the Wurundjeri people in Naam, Melbourne. And a big thanks to listener Frank, who suggested I end the program with this. Until next time, work it like a charm.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.